Yeah, well, it's largely the odds and ends that came out last week, because as we look into the next 3 weeks, there's very little in the way of economic data. In fact, here in Australia, we don't get any more reasonable economic readings until the week beginning 10th of January, so we do get quite a reprieve before we get any more information. But what came out last week, quite interesting, particularly in the US. We had obviously the Fed meeting, but also a little bit more pipeline inflation information too. We started with the pipeline inflation information with the producer price index for the month of November. We'd already had a CPI reading for November, which was the highest at 6.8% year-on-year since 1982, so a long time since we'd seen CPI inflation as high as it's been in the US. We then backed it up early last week with the producer price index reading, which suggests there's still more in the pipeline. It came in higher than expected, producer price index. It was up 0.8% month on month rather than 0.6% the market expected. As a result of that, the annual producer price inflation rate lifted to 9.6% from 8.8%. So we're almost knocking on the door of 10% now for producer price inflation year on year in the United States. And even the core was 7.7%, up from 7% the month before. It's really alarming at the early stages of the producer price index when you're looking at basic materials, right, at early stage producer prices. They're rising at over 40% year on year. That's now beaten anything that in records for the United States. It goes past the worst of the 1970s and 1980s producer price inflation at that early stage. So that includes, the oil price problems of the 1973-74, where it got to high 30s. We're now above 40% for that part of the US inflation reading. So there's nothing temporary about what's happening with inflation. It is getting higher all the time and will probably continue to get higher in the data over the next few months. So the Fed had little option but to pivot at this most recent meeting. But it's still, talking about, for the time being, we'll just tackle this by tapering the bond buying program faster. We'll now have that out the way by March next year. That's not to say, at the moment, the bond buying program is actually adding liquidity all the time. You've got emergency response monetary policy as if we've got deep deflation in line with inflation, which is running at levels which in some cases are record for the United States in recent times over the last 50, 60, 70 years a very, very high annual CPI reading. So what the Fed's now saying, we're no longer complete dubs. We will think about lifting rates now in 2022. We'll do three rate hikes next year. That will take the Fed funds rate up to 1%. The first of those rate hikes probably comes in March. With our forward forecasts, we think we might get the Fed funds rate over the next 3 years up to 2 to 2.5%. What this implies is at this stage, even with very, very high inflation rates in the US, the Fed is saying at no stage are we contemplating having the Fed funds in positive in real terms. It's still going to be deeply negative all the way through the next 3 years. That obviously is not going to cap inflation. So there's a real risk in this that the Fed keeps on changing its guidance at future meetings depending on what the data shows. And for the time being, the data is responding to very easy policy. So we're getting very, very strong readings for the most part out of the US. We've still got this combination, very strong growth combined with high inflation. And the only thing that might temper that is if Omicron throws a curveball or something like that, where you end up with tighter restrictions, or the way in which most countries are responding to Omicron is, let's let this thing run. It doesn't appear to clog up the hospital system. We'll see if we can live with this thing. So even that doesn't look like it'll be a growth constraint in the very, very near term. Some of the other indicators that came out last week, still very, very strong. We had retail sales up another 0.3% after a huge 1.8% rise the month before. That was the month of November. We had initial jobless claims are still down around the 200,000 mark for the most recent week. We had housing starts and housing permits. These are right at the leading edge of economic activity. Yeah, they're beating market expectations by a country mile. In November, housing starts lifted. They were expected to lift by 3%. They lifted by 11.8%. Housing permits, right at the very leading edge, were expected to lift by 0.4%. They lifted 3.6%. That was after they rose 4.2% the month before. We had National Association of Home Builders Index came out. That's well and truly in the 80s. It went up another notch, surprisingly, so an even stronger 84 reading. We have Philadelphia Fed and the Empire State Survey, still pretty strong for the regions there. In the case of New York State, it actually improved to 31.9 from 30.9. Did come back a bit for the Philly Fed to 15.4 from 39, but you know, that's not too worrying a dip in the case of the United States. So this week in the US, not a lot of data coming out before Christmas. We get revised GDP. There won't be much change in that. It was 2.1% annualized for Q3 in the early readings. We think it'll stay at that. We get some existing home sales data on Wednesday. That's expected to lift strongly by about 3.2%. And before Christmas, we'll get things like personal income, personal consumption expenditure, new home sales and durable goods orders, all for the month of November, and all looking pretty strong. Personal income, personal consumption expenditure, between 0.4 and 0.6% month on month for both of them. So they're jogging along pretty firm, as you'd expect, you know, because policy is supportive. Even with the pivot by the Fed, you know, it's not exactly tightening, you've still got very easy fiscal policy settings in the United States. You've had all that wealth creation over the course of the past year through house prices and the rise in equity markets. You've got wages, which are running pretty strongly too. So you can't bet against that. It's got a lot of forward momentum. And will do it until we get some further pivot in terms of policy, which is a higher risk that will happen at some point. And that's obviously what the market fears, that now the Fed's changed its spot somewhat, it can keep changing its spots, and we'll do it for future meetings. So that's where the risks lie. In terms of China, China's the odd man out. You know, sort of everywhere else around the world, we've got economies which are really lifting through 2021 and with a fair bit of inflation pressure. In China, we got the inflation pressure through producer prices, but as far as the economy is concerned, we're waiting for the Chinese authorities to ease up on policies. One of the few areas where they've been tightening for their own purposes, particularly regarding a quarter of their economy, which is the commercial and residential construction, property construction sectors. Those have been softening off. We saw it in data last week. If you look anywhere else around the world, you've got house prices which are now rising at 20s, sort of high teens to 20% in most places. In the case of China, at the beginning of this year, house prices were rising at 12% year on year. It's been a deceleration ever since. And they were down to 3.4% year on year. Going to October, they've slid again to 3% year on year. In terms of purchase prices for new housing developments now, it's a case that prices, there really isn't a price. They fall away completely. So you've got a lot of weakness running through things like house prices, which we don't get anywhere else around the world. Fixed asset investment spending has been decelerating. Decelerated further in November to 5.2% from 6.1%. Industrial production, a little bit of a lift as they've got on top of one or two of their energy problems, but still very, very weak by Chinese standards at 3.8% year on year from 3.5%. And retail sales, which came back to 3.9% year on year in November from 4.9%. What this implies is that China's GDP growth rate, which is already down to 4.9% year on year in Q3, will be down in the 2 to 3% year on year mark when we get Q4 data coming out in the middle of January. So, this is significant slowing for the second biggest economy around the world, but it is unique to China. Everywhere else you look around the world, you've got acceleration running through. In terms of Australia, when I say acceleration, as soon as we took the restrictions off in Victoria and New South Wales, businesses tried to employ like fury. And so some of the data we had last week, we had the November labour force data came out. Truly stunning. We had employment, which the market had a huge forecast there. We thought would be a rise of 200,000. We got a rise of 366,100 in 1 month. If you were to put that in the context of non-farm payrolls in the US, when you see at some points in the recovery phase in the US, we did get up to 1 million in terms of non-farm payrolls. Population adjusted, that 366,100 would be the equivalent of getting 5 million for a non-farm payrolls in the United States. That puts into context of just how ridiculously strong that is compared with just about anywhere else around the world. And, of course, it's been supported by policy, very, very easy monetary policy, and, of course, fiscal policy has been pretty loose as well. We had the participation rate, which bounced hugely to 66.1%, almost back up at a record high from 64.6% going back the month before. And the unemployment rate, even with that huge bounce in the participation rate, because of the size of the lift in employment, fell to 4.6% from 5.2%. Very good chance that when we get the December numbers in the middle of January, we're going to get another huge reading too. And we'll have the unemployment rate coming down further. In amongst all this, the government brought out its mid-year economic and financial outlook last week. And there's an improvement in the budget position, even with the lockdowns, relative to what they expected when they brought down their budget going back to May. The reason for that is that they've basically upgraded much of their growth longer term in terms of their forecasts. The unemployment rate, they've now looking at much lower unemployment rates. And the other interesting part is a little bit of difference now between the RBA and Treasury in terms of CPI forecasts. The CPI forecasts now running through the MIEFO are now above the midpoint of the Reserve Bank's 2 to 3% range the entire way through the forecast period. They're looking at... we're currently running at 3.8, looking at this coming back to perhaps 2.75 average. That'd be optimistic. It looks like it's going to stay higher than that in 2021-22. Then beyond that, they've got it forecast at 2.5. The RBA's got forecast at 2. If you're looking at the Commonwealth Treasury's forecasts, the RBA should be a lay-down misere to be tightening monetary policy before long. So just one of those interesting factors between the two official groups now. The budget is looking better because of that strong growth and the tax revenues which have run off it and the lack of payments for Social Security and welfare relative to the original budget estimates. So over the budget for this year and the forward years, it's roughly about $7 to $10 billion for each of the periods better than where they were previously forecasting back at budget time. So, for example, in this current financial year, the budget deficit was expected to be $106.6 billion. It's now forecast at $99.2 billion. And, that changes from minus 5% of GDP to minus 4.5%. So, it's looking pretty much better. Now, the problem is the improvement range for the budget, the government's also in the MIEFO indicated it's going to spend it all. So it has no intention of actually reducing the size of the structural budget deficit. You know, everything that in the improvement is all to do with the massive improvement coming through from tax revenues because of growth and all these bits, and every bit of money they get there, don't push it back to the bottom line. We'll spend a lot. And of course, this is running into, and a lot of it's not identified yet where they're spending it, but they will be in the budget that comes out next year. So, you know, for Australia, you know, we've got huge momentum running for economic growth running into next year. For the time being, the RBA is still in sort of fiction territory. We can rely on things like slow progress through EBAs, enterprise bargaining agreements, to keep the lid on wages. Well, good luck with that. You don't have to look far to see where wage pressure is coming through. And some of the identifiable pressure points running into the first part of next year, for a start, the Q4 CPI, when it comes out, that'll come out towards the end of January. The wage price index, when it comes out in the middle of February, now looks as if it'd be pretty high. The pivot you saw with the Fed, yeah, at some point fairly early in the new year, I think you're going to see that sort of pivot with the RBA, where they don't consider us to be quite as different in terms of inflation pressure as they're making out so far, although that's still the position they're trying to press at the moment. So just those sorts of factors watching for over the course of the next month or two, which probably is going to give us an awful lot of volatility at times running through financial markets too. Just briefly in Europe, you know, it's going to be worth watching for a couple of reasons. You know, obviously, they're in winter at the moment. It's a pretty severe winter there too, by recent standards. And so people are staying inside. So Omicron's just getting a life of its own. It's taking off way faster than it is most other places elsewhere. Whilst it still looks to be a milder version, because of the sheer numbers, it's putting people into hospital in very large numbers now, and is putting hospital systems under acute pressure. And yeah, we've already seen that in the Netherlands they've gone into a snap lockdown, which will run from literally today through to the middle of January. In the UK, they're struggling to put into place further restrictions to try and get on top of the infection rates, which are running very, very fast. So, Omicron's a bit of a problem for, you know, the way we should treat this in forecasts at the moment. In the case of Europe, it may be a bit of a slowing factor. Having said that, central banks are having to respond to some of the inflation pressure. And the latest bank, or central bank, to buckle to high inflation pressure is the Bank of England. They surprised with a 25 basis point rate hike last week. ECB, still trying to hold the line, they didn't move rates, so they've still got very, very low rates. But quite clearly, you know, sort of it's a real tussle between ultra-strong growth being pushed by policy responses, the occasional headwind that comes from the virus, and inflation, which has now become entrenched because, you know, central banks have just not been in the game to try and head it off at a fairly early stage. So yeah, this is a real forecasting challenge, just how inflation will become, what the eventual policy responses to that will have to be. One thing which I think we should expect with some certainty is that from time to time, you know, we will get this stepping up motion running through bond yields everywhere, because the bond market won't be able to sit back as we get these inflation reports that are likely to come out in the early months of next year.